welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, presenting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, drama, as the NBC University Theater brings us an adaptation of the James Joyce novel, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. This was published in 1916, and from my research, the only James Joyce story adapted on radio during its golden era. This was first heard on NBC on April 23, 1950.
This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, a radio first, a presentation in dramatic form of James Joyce's extraordinary first novel, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. The adaptation is by Brainerd Duffield and Emerson Crocker. Here now, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Once upon a time, and a very good time it was, there was a moo cow coming along the road. And this moo cow met a nice little boy named Baby Tuckoo.
My father told me that story. My father looked down at me through an eyeglass. I was Baby Tuckoo.
Oh, the wild rose blossoms on the green little place.
That was a song he taught me. I sang that song. That was my song.
Oh, the wild rose blossoms on the little green place.
Sometimes I danced the sailor's hornpipe, and Uncle Charles and Dante clapped their hands.
Cha-la-la-la-la-la,
Uncle Charles and Dante were older than my father and mother, but Uncle Charles was older than Dante. Dante had two brushes in her room. The brush with the maroon velvet back was for Michael Davitt, and the brush with the green velvet back was for Parnell. But one day, Dante ripped the green velvet back off the brush and said that Parnell was a bad man.
Parnell is a bad man. He's a bad, wicked man.
Now then, Mrs. Reardon, that's enough of that.
That was called politics. There were two sides to it. Dante was on one side, and my father and Mr. Casey were on the other.
A bad, wicked man. The priest was right to say so.
No, that's enough.
Dante knew a lot of things. She taught me where the Mozambique Channel was, and what was the longest river in America. Both my father and Uncle Charles said that Dante was a clever and well-read woman. Now, when Dante made that noise after dinner and put her hand up to her mouth, that was heartburn.
Beg your pardon.
The Vances lived in number 7. They had a different father and mother. When I grew up, I was going to marry Eileen. I told them so.
When I grow up, I'm going to marry Eileen.
What a thing to say. Stephen will apologize.
No.
Oh, yes, Stephen must apologize.
Oh, if not, the Eagles will come and pull out his eyes. Pull out his eyes, apologize. Pull out his eyes, apologize.
Pull out his eyes, apologize.
Pull out his eyes, apologize.
I hid under the table. When I was older, it was time to go away to school. My mother told me not to speak to the rough boys. Nice mother. And when she said goodbye, she put up her veil double to kiss me, and her eyes and nose were red. She was a nice mother, but she was not so nice when she cried. I pretended I didn't see. My father gave me 2 5-shilling pieces for pocket money.
Goodbye, Stephen. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Stephen. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mother. Goodbye, Father. Goodbye.
And so I went away to school. On the scrimmage field, the fellas had muddy boots. And they kicked and stamped and fought. I was small and my eyes were weak and watery. I couldn't catch the ball. Small, couldn't get the ball. Small, couldn't get the ball. Roddy Kickham was a decent fella. He was the captain. But Nasty Roach was a stink. Nasty Roach had big hands. One day he said to me,
"What is your name?"
Stephen Dallas.
What kind of a name is that? What is your father?
A gentleman.
Is he a magistrate? My father's a magistrate.
His father was a magistrate. It was a very grand thing to be a magistrate.
Tell us, De Dallas, you kiss your mother before you go to bed?
I do.
Oh, say, here's a fellow says he kisses his mother before he goes to bed.
I do not.
Oh, I say, here's a fellow says he doesn't kiss his mother before he goes to bed.
Now, what was the right answer? Was it right to kiss one's mother? What did that mean, to kiss? You put your face up to say goodnight, and your mother put her face down. That was to kiss. Her lips were soft and they wetted your cheek. They made a tiny noise. Kiss. Why did people do that with their faces? When the bell rang for night prayers, we went into the chapel. There was a cold night smell in the chapel. It was a holy smell. It wasn't like the smell of the old peasants who came to Sunday Mass. That was a smell of air and rain and turf and corduroy. It'd be lovely to sleep in a cottage before the fire of smoking turf, in the warm dark lit by the fire, breathing the smell of the peasants, air and rain and turf and corduroy.
Visit, we beseech thee, O Lord, this habitation. May the holy angels dwell herein to preserve us in peace, and may thy blessings be always upon us through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
And I said my prayers, too.
God bless me, Father, and me, Mother, and spare them to me. God bless me, little brothers and sisters, and spare them to me. God bless Dante and Uncle Charles, and spare them to me.
There was a picture of the earth on the first page of my geography. All different places had different names. They were all in different countries. The countries were in continents, and the continents were in the world, and the world was in the universe. One day on the flyleaf of my geography, I wrote my name and where I was. Stephen Dedalus, Class of Elements, Clongowes Wood College, County Kildare, Ireland, Europe, the world, the universe. And one day a boy named Fleming wrote something on the opposite page, and this is what he wrote. Stephen Dedalus is my name, Ireland is my nation, Clongowes is my dwelling place, and heaven's my expectation. Now, wasn't that a funny thing to write?
Please to give me your attention till I take the roll. Attai?
Present, Father.
Barrett?
Present, Father.
Cullen?
Present, Father.
Dedalus?
Present, Father.
Fleming? Is Fleming here?
Present, Father.
All the boys seemed to me very strange. They'd all different names. They all had fathers and mothers and different clothes and voices. Some of them were good, and some of them were mean. It was mean of Wells to shoulder me into the square ditch. That was a mean thing to do. All the fellas said it was. And how cold and slimy the water was. And a fella had once seen a big rat jump plop in the scum.
Roach.
Present, Father.
Sorin.
Present, Father.
Wells.
Present, Father.
It would have been nice to be at home, to lie in the hearthrug before the fire, to put my head in my mother's lap. But I couldn't, and so I longed for study and prayers to be over and to be in bed. I didn't feel so well.
That is all, then, for today. You're dismissed.
Come on.
What's up, Dedalus? Have you a pain, or what's up with you?
I don't know.
Sick in your breadbasket because your face looks so white. It'll go away.
Oh, yes, thanks.
But I wasn't sick there. I was sick in my heart, if you could be sick in that place. Which was very decent of Fleming to ask me. I wanted to cry.
Tell me, are you not well?
I don't know.
Go get into bed. I'll tell McLeod you're not well.
What's the matter?
He's sick.
Who is?
Young Dedalus.
Is he sick?
He must stay in bed.
It was a mean thing to do.
What was?
What Wells did, shore him into that ditch.
Cold, slimy old ditch. There are rats there.
Now he's got a fever, they'll pack him off to the infirmary.
Poor Dedalus.
Poor Dedalus.
Poor Dedalus.
This was the infirmary. I was sick then. I was really sick. Had they written home to tell my mother and father? I could write a letter myself for the priest to take.
Dear mother, I'm sick. I want to go home. Please come and take me home. I'm in the infirmary. Your fond son, Stephen.
How far away they were, my mother and father. There was cold sunlight outside the window. I wondered if I'd die. You could die just the same on a sunny day. I might die before my mother came. Then there'd be a dead mass in the chapel. All the fellas would be dressed in black, all with sad faces. The rector'd be there. There'd be tall yellow candles in the altar. And they'd carry the coffin out of the chapel slowly, And the bell had tolled slowly. I could hear it tolling. Dong, dong, the castle bell. Farewell, my mother. Bury me in the old churchyard beside my eldest brother. My coffin shall be black. Six angels at my back. Two to sing and two to pray and two to carry my soul away. Beautiful and sad that was. The bell. The bell. Farewell, oh, farewell.
It was while I was there in the infirmary that I had the strange dream. I saw a sea of waves, long dark waves rising and falling, dark under the moonless night. And I saw a multitude of people gathered by the water's edge to see the ship that was entering the harbor. A tall man stood on the deck, and he lifted his hand toward the people.
He is dead. Parnell! Parnell! He is dead!
And I saw Dante in a maroon velvet dress with a green velvet mantle on her shoulders, walking proudly and silently past the people who knelt by the water's edge. And when I woke up, Father Arnold and Brother Michael were standing near me.
Father Arnold, sir, I'm hungry. Could you have them bring me a round of buttered toast?
Ah, butter you up. You'll get your walking papers in the morning when the doctor comes.
Will I? I'm not well yet.
Ah, you're well enough. You'll get your walking papers, I tell you. It's time to be going home for the Christmas holidays.
Going home for the holidays? That'd be lovely. Getting up in the early wintry morning to ride in a sleigh. We drove along the country roads. We passed the house of the jolly farmer. The peasant women stood at the half doors. The lovely smell there was in the wintry air. Cheer after cheer after cheer. The train was full of fellas, and the train raced on over the flatlands. The telegraph poles were passing, passing. The train went on and on. It knew. There'd be lanterns in the hall and ropes of green branches. Holly and ivy around the pier glass, green and red twined around the chandeliers. Holly and ivy for me and for Christmas. Lovely. And all the people to welcome me.
Welcome home, Stephen.
My mother kissed me. Was that right? Was it right to kiss?
Welcome home, Stephen, my boy.
My mother had a nicer smell than my father. He'd a hairy face. He wasn't a magistrate, my father, but when I asked him for sixpence, he gave me a shilling.
Welcome home, Stephen. Why, what a little man you've grown.
That was Dante. Dante of the Velvet Brushes. She didn't like Parnell.
The Christmas table spread. Dinner should be ready soon.
So I was home again. This was to be my first Christmas dinner downstairs. My brothers and sisters had to stay in the nursery, but this was my first Christmas dinner. And here I was. What a happy thing it was to be at home. So we were waiting. Waiting for the door to open and for the servants to come in holding the big dishes. All were waiting. Uncle Charles, who sat by the window. Dante and Mr. Casey, who sat in the easy chairs beside the hearth. My father, who looked at himself in the pier glass above the mantelpiece. I waxed his mustache.
Oh, we had a good walk, hadn't we, Stephen? Yes, I wonder now if there's any likelihood of dinner this evening. Oh, well, we got a good breath of ozone today, didn't we?
And then my father turned to Dante and said...
You didn't stare out at all, Mrs. Reardon.
And Dante frowned and said...
No.
Then my father brought forth a great stone jar of whiskey and poured a little of the whiskey into two glasses and came back to the fireplace.
Thimbleful, John. Just to whet your appetite.
Oh, thank you, Simon.
Then the servants entered and placed the dishes on the table. And my mother came in with them.
Now, Mrs. Reardon, sit over. John, sit you down here, me hearty.
Come along, Uncle Charles. There's a bird here waiting for you.
Stephen, sit you here.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which through thy bounty we are bound to receive through Christ our Lord. Amen.
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 And the warm, heavy smell of turkey and ham and celery arose from the plates, and the fire was banked high and red in the grate. And when dinner was ended, the big plum pudding had been carried in, with bluish fire running around it, and a little green flag flying from the top for Ireland.
Simon, you haven't given Mrs. Reardon any sauce.
Oh, haven't I? Mrs. Reardon, pity the poor blind. Here you are.
No, thanks.
How are you off, sir? Huh? Oh, right as the mail, Simon. Right as the mail. Here, Stephen. Here's something to make your hair curl. Is it tender, boy?
Yes, sir.
I was thinking just now, that was a good answer our friend Christie made to the canner today, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, it was. I didn't think he had that much in him.
I'll pay your dues, Father Sissy, when you cease turning the house of God into a polling booth. That's what he said.
A nice answer for any man calling himself a Catholic to give to his priest.
Oh, they have only themselves to blame. If they took a fool's advice, they would confine their attention to religion.
It is religion. They are doing their duty in warning the people.
We go to the house of God to pray to our Maker and not to hear elects and addresses.
It is religion. They must direct their flocks.
And preach politics from the altar, is it?
For pity's sake, and for pity's sake, let us have no political discussion on this day of all days in the year.
Quite right, ma'am, quite right. No, Simon, not another word.
Yes, Uncle Charles. Now then, who's for more turkey? Not anyone.
Nice language for any Catholic to use.
Mrs. Reardon, I appeal to you. Let the matter drop now.
And am I to sit here and listen to the pastors of my church being flouted?
Nobody's saying a word against them so long as they don't meddle in politics.
The bishops and priests of Ireland have spoken, and they must be obeyed.
Let them leave politics alone, or the people may be leaving their church alone.
You hear? Do you hear?
Mr. Casey, Simon, let it end now.
Were we to desert him at the bidding of the English people? Were we expected to desert Parnell?
He was no longer worthy to lead. He was a public sinner.
We are all sinners, and black sinners.
Woe be unto any man by whom scandal cometh. It would be better for him that a millstone were tied about his neck and that he were cast into the depths of the sea.
Yes, yes, we know all that. Here, Stephen, show me your plate, old man. Eat away now. There's a tasty bit here from the after quarters. If any lady or gentleman would care for it... Oh, well, you can't say but you were asked. I think I'd better eat it myself because I'm not very well in my health lately. Eh, Stephen? Well, now, the day kept up fine after all. I think there were more strangers in town this year than there was last Christmas. Not a cheerful word from a single soul. Well, my Christmas dinner's been spoiled anyhow.
There could be neither luck nor grace in a house where there's no respect for the pastors of the church.
Respect, is it? Princes of the church, is it?
They are the Lord's anointed. They're an honor to the country.
You should see that fat fellow of a parish priest of ours lapping up his bacon and cabbage on a cold winter's day. Ho-ho, Johnny!
Really, Simon, you should not speak like that before Stephen. It's not right.
Oh, he'll remember all this when he grows up. The language he heard against God and priests in his own home.
Let him remember, too, the language with which the priests in the priest's ponds broke poor Parnell's heart. Pounded him into his grave. Let him remember that.
When he was down, they turned on him to betray him and rend him like rats in a sewer.
They behave rightly. Honor to them.
Well, it's perfectly dreadful to say that not even on the birthday of Christ and his feast of love can we be free from these disputes.
Oh, come now, come. Can't we not have our opinions, whatever they are, without this bad temper?
I will not say nothing. I will defend my church when it is insulted and spit upon by renegade Catholics.
If you mean me, ma'am, am no renegade Catholic. I am a Catholic, as my father was before me, and his father before him.
The more shame to you now to speak as you do. The blackest Protestant in the land wouldn't speak the language I've heard this evening.
Ah, poor Ireland. We're an unfortunate priest-ridden race. Always were and always will be.
If we are a priest-ridden race, we ought to be proud. Touch them not, says Christ, for they are the apple of my eye.
And can we not love our country then? Can we not fight for it as I have done? Are we not to follow the man that was born to lead us?
A traitor to his country. A traitor, an adulterer. The priests were right to abandon him. Right, right. God and morality and religion come first.
Mrs. Reardon, don't excite yourself answering them.
God and religion before everything. God and religion before the world. And my 1,000 curses on Parnell.
Very well, then. If it comes to that... I say no God for Ireland.
God, John.
We've had too much God in Ireland.
Blasphemer, devil, fiend out of hell. But we downed him, didn't we? We won. We downed Parnell.
We crushed him. We crushed him to death. Didn't we? Didn't we?
When I looked up, Mr. Casey was scraping the air from before his eyes as though he were tearing aside a cobweb. And he bowed his head on his hands with a sob of pain.
Poor Parnell. My dead king.
And when I lifted my face to look at my father, I saw that his eyes were full of tears. The altar was beautiful with flowers and candles of benediction when the incense went up in clouds and the choir sang. It was spring then, and I couldn't read my prayer book because a boy had knocked me down the day before and my spectacles had been broken in three places. And when I took communion, the rector seemed small and far away when he stooped down. Communion was beautiful. Once a lot of generals had asked Napoleon what was the happiest day of his life. They thought he'd say the day he won some great battle, but he said, "Gentlemen, the happiest day of my life was the day I made my first Holy Communion." The fellows were talking together in little groups nearby on the cricket field.
They were caught near the hill.
Who caught them?
Father Dolan.
Why did they run away?
I know why.
A fat lot, you know.
Go on, tell us why.
You know the altar wine they keep in the sacristy?
Yes.
Well, they drank that, and it was found out who did it by the smell. And that's why they ran away.
And how will they be punished?
They'll both be flogged or else expelled.
I shouldn't like to be them.
They'll both get it on the vital spot.
Oh, how could they laugh about it that way? I was afraid. I was afraid to be flogged. Puck. Puck. That was the sound the cricket bat made when it hit the ball. Oh, there were different kinds of sounds. When Father Dolan punished a boy with a stick, it made a sound, too. It made a high whistling sound in the air before it struck. His stick was called the pandy bat, and the fellow said it was made of whalebone and leather with lead inside. Made me shivery just to think of it and what the pain must be. I was in the study hall, and this was Father Dolan, the prefect of studies. He struck on the desk with his stick.
Any boys want flogging here, Father Arnold? Any lazy loafers that want flogging in this class? Who is this boy? Why is he on his knees in the middle of the class? What is your name, boy?
Fleming, sir.
Fleming. An idler, of course. I can see it in your eye. Why is he on his knees, Father Arnold?
He wrote a bad Latin theme and he missed all the questions in grammar.
Of course he did. A born idler, I can see it in the corner of his eye. Up, Fleming. Up, my boy. Hold out your hand. Other hand. Kneel down.
Fleming knelt down, squeezing his hands under his armpits, his face twisted with pain. The noise of the stick was terrible. My heart was beating and fluttering.
At your work, all of you. We want no lazy, idle loafers here. Lazy, idle little schemers. At your work, I tell you. Father Dolan will be in to see you every day. Father Dolan will be in tomorrow. You, boy, when will Father Dolan be in again?
Tomorrow, sir.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Make up your minds for that. Every day, Father Dolan. You, boy, who are you?
To Dallas, sir.
Why are you not writing like the others?
Me glasses.
Why is he not writing, Father Arnold?
He broke his glasses and I exempted him from work.
What is this I hear? What is this? What is your name?
Dedalus, sir.
Out here, Dedalus. Lazy little schemer. I see schemer in your face. Where did you break your glasses?
The cinder path, sir.
The cinder path. I know that trick. Lazy, idle, little loafer. Broke my glasses. An old schoolboy trick. Out with your hand this moment.
I held out my trembling hand in the air. A hot, burning, stinging, tingling glow crumpled my hand like a leaf in the fire. Scalding tears filled my eyes. My whole body was shaking with fright. My crumpled, burning, livid hand shook in the air. I tried to hold back the hot tears and the cry that was scalding my throat.
Other hand.
I drew back my maimed and quivering right arm and held out my left hand. A fierce, maddening, tingling, burning pain made my hands shrink together with the palm and fingers in a livid, quivering mass. The scalding water burst forth from my eyes. I drew back my shaking arm in terror. My body shook with a palsy of fright, and in shame and rage, I felt the scalding tears fall down my flaming cheeks.
Kneel down. Get at your work, all of you. Father Dolan will be in every day to see if any boy, any lazy, idle little loafer, wants flogging. Every day. Every day.
You may return to your places, you two.
Oh,
It was unfair and cruel because the doctor had told me not to read without glasses. And I had sent for a new pair. And Father Arnold had said that I need not study till the glasses came. I always got the card for first or second in the class. And then to be called a schemer before them all and to be punished. It was cruel and unfair. And after class, the fellow said so, too.
It's a stinking mean thing, that's what it is, to pandy a fellow for what's not his fault.
You really broke them by accident, didn't you?
Of course he did. I wouldn't stand it. I'd go up and tell the rector on him.
Yes, he lifted the stick over his shoulder and he's not allowed to do that.
Did it hurt very much?
Very much.
I wouldn't stand it. It's a stinking mean low trick. I'd go straight up and tell the rector.
Yes, do.
Yes, do.
Yeah.
Come in. Well, my little man, what is it?
I broke my glasses, sir.
Oh, well, if we broke our glasses, we must head home for a new pair.
I wrote home, sir, and Father Arnold said I had not studied till I come.
Well, quite right.
But, sir...
Yes?
Father Dolan came today and pandied me because I wasn't writing my theme.
Oh, is your name Dedalus, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
And where did you break your glasses?
On the cinder path, sir. A fellow was coming out of the bicycle house, and I fell and they got broken. I don't know the fellow's name.
Oh, well, it was a mistake, and I'm sure Father Dolan did not know.
But I told him I broke them, sir, and he pandied me.
Well, now, did you tell him you'd written home?
No, sir.
Well, then Father Dolan did not understand, and you can say that I excused you from your lessons.
Yes, sir, but Father Dolan said he would come in tomorrow to pandy me again.
Oh, very well, it was a mistake, and I shall speak to Father Dolan myself. Will that do now?
Oh, yes, sir, thanks. Well,
good day now.
Good day, sir.
The air was soft and gray and mild, and evening was coming. There was the smell of evening in the air, the smell of the fields and the country. In the soft gray silence through the quiet air, I could hear the sound of the cricket bats hitting the ball. Pick, pack, pock, puck, like drops of water in a fountain, falling softly in the brimming bowl. I am Stephen Dedalus. I'm walking beside my father, whose name is Simon Dedalus. We're in Cork, in Ireland. Cork is a city. Our room is in the Victoria Hotel. Victoria. Stephen. Simon. Names. The memory of my childhood suddenly grows dim. I try to call forth its vivid moments, but I remember only names. Dante, Parnell, Uncle Charles, Mr. Casey, all now dead and gone. A little boy had been taught geography by an old woman who kept two brushes in her wardrobe. Then I'd been sent away from home to school. I'd made my first communion. I had a fever and dreamed of being dead. But I'd not died then. It's strange to think back on a little boy in a gray belted suit and the trousers tucked in at the knees by elastic bands. It didn't trouble me in that long ago September to hear that they wouldn't send me back to school. In a vague way, I understood my father was in trouble, and that he'd grown very poor. And now I was in Cork, and a barrel organ was playing, and along the Mardyke the trees were in bloom, and the leaves whispering in the sunlight, and I was walking beside my father.
When you kick out for yourself, Stephen, as I dare say you will one of these days, remember, whatever you do, to mix with gentlemen.
Yes, Father.
When I was a young fella, I tell you, I enjoyed myself. I mixed with fine, decent fellas. Every one of us could do something. One fella could sing a comic song, another was a good oarsman or a good racket player, another could tell a good story, and so on. We kept the ball rolling anyhow and saw a bit of life.
Yes, Father.
But we were all gentlemen, Stephen. At least I hope we were. And that's the kind of fellas I want you to associate with. Fellas of the right kidney. I'm talking to you as a friend, Stephen, as my father talked to me.
Yes, Father, yes, Father. I felt sorry for him in his fine talk. He was shabby now and poor. And on the next day, the last piece of property would be sold. So I followed him meekly about the city from bar to bar. And with many a sigh and many a sip, he conjured up the images of his old dead cronies and the scenes of days gone by.
Aye, bedad. Here's Queen's College, and there's the quadrangle. You've heard me speak of it, didn't you, Stephen? Ah, many's the time we went down there, the crowd of us, Harry Peard, and little Jack Mountain, and Bob Dias, and Mick Lacey that I told you of this morning. And Joey Corbett and poor little good-hearted Johnny Keevers who went off to America so long ago.
I walked on at his side and listened to the stories I'd heard before and the names of the dead revelers who meant nothing to me, who'd been the companions of his youth. I felt a faint sickness in my heart.
Have another drink, Johnny.
Thanks, and I will. I was going to ask this jacquin of yours, Mr. Dedalus, which were the prettier, the Dublin girls or the Cork girls?
He's not that way built. I'll leave him alone. He'd tell you which river was the prettiest, the Liffey or the Lee, and write you a poem in it. But he's a level-headed boy and doesn't bother himself about the girls.
Then he's not his father's son. Your father was the boldest flirt in the city of Cork in his day.
Now, don't be putting ideas into his head.
I can remember the days. What age do you think I am? I can remember even your great-grandfather, old John Stephen Dedalus. Aye, and a fierce old fire-eater he was.
There's a memory. That's three... that's four generations.
Aye.
By Johnny Cashman, you must be nearing the century.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It's just 27 years of age I am.
we're as old as we feel, Johnny. Just finish what you have and we'll have another. Here, Tim or Tom or whatever your name is, give us the same again. Be dead, I don't feel more than 18 myself. Here's this son of mine, not half me age, and I'm a better man than he is any day of the week. Be dead, I'll sing a tenor song against him, or vault a five-barred gate against him, as I did in the races 30 years ago.
Ah, but he'll beat you here. Up here, I mean. He's a deep thinker by the look of him.
I only hope he'll be as good a man as his father. That's all I can say.
And if he is, he'll do.
Here's a toast. Thanks be to God, Johnny, that we lived so long and did so little harm.
I watched the glasses being raised as they drank to the memory of the past. No life or youth stirred in me as it did in them. I tasted the joy of my loneliness. From the comfort and reverie of the home we once knew, we'd come now to a bare, cheerless house in the slum-ridden city of Dublin. A gloomy, foggy town, I thought it. Oh, I was angry with myself for being young, and angry with fortune for shaping the world into a place of poverty and squalor. And the sound of my father's voice and the pitiful sight of him would sometimes drive me to the streets.
There's a crack of the whip in me yet, Stephen, old chap. We're not dead yet, sonny. No, nor half dead. Hey, where are you going?
Out, I'm going out. I used to pass unchallenged among the docks and along the quays, wondering at the multitude of corks that lay bobbing on the water in a thick yellow scum, and at the crowds of people, and the rumbling carts, and the bales of merchandise swung aloft out of the steamers. I looked on the wharves, and on the river, and on the lowering skies, and I continued to wander up and down, day after day, as if in search of someone that eluded me. For though my father said I didn't think of girls, the truth is, I thought of very little else. There was a girl I half remembered meeting in some dim past, and through the circling of the dancers, and amid the music and the laughter, her glance found mine, flattering, taunting, searching, exciting my heart. Then it was the last tram, and I'd seen her home. She'd like me to catch hold of her, I thought. I could hold her and kiss her. But I did neither. She was gone. And when I was alone in the deserted tram, I tore my ticket into shreds and stared into the dark. But I dreamt I'd find her again. There'd be a small white house and a garden of rose bushes on the road that led to the mountains. And we'd meet there quietly as if we'd always known each other. And there in the dark and the silence, all weakness and timidity would fall from me in that one moment.
Mrs. Madger, get out of the road there, boy.
But I was here. I had not found her. And it was time to return to my father's house. I had dreamed my dreams, and my long spell of leisure had come to an end. From the kitchen door, I heard my father's voice.
I walked bang into him just at the corner of the square.
Then I suppose it's all arranged. I never liked the idea of sending him to the Christian Brothers.
No, let him stick to the Jesuits since he began with them. They'll be of service in after years. Those are the fellows that can get you a position.
So I'm to go back to college, then?
And maybe to the university. Put your shoulder to the wheel, old chap. You've had a fine long holiday.
Oh, I'm sure he'll work very hard now, won't you, Stephen?
Give a boy the best education that money can buy, I say. The best that money can buy.
Yes, I mean what I say. There is heresy in this essay. Perhaps you didn't know that, Daedalus. What you say here about the soul and the creator, that's heresy.
Yes, sir. I understand that now, sir.
Aristotle, Aquinas, Epictetus, Plato, Plutarch, Sophocles, Euripides.
Yes, sir.
Chaucer, Spencer, Shakespeare, Milton, Dryden, Pope, Byron, Keats, Shelley.
Yes, sir.
May we expect to have something from you on the aesthetic question, Mr. Daedalus?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, splendid now. I believe we'll make a scholar of you yet.
Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. By day, I was a model student.
Did you hear the results of the exams?
Griffin and O'Flynn are through the home civil. Moonan got fifth place in pure mathematics. Shocknessy got 14th.
Daedalus out front again in arts and letters. How do you do it, Daedalus?
Who knows?
Ah, you're a terrible man. Always alone. Are you a man at all?
We're all animals. I also am an animal.
You are, but just now we are in a mental world. Do you ever leave it, Daedalus?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. At night, I returned to my wanderings. How far had I walked? What hour was it? My footsteps led me from street to street until at last I stood in a gloom of narrow lanes and doorways. Women in long gowns slowly moved from house to house, and yellow gas flames flickered in the hall. A young woman dressed in a long pink gown laid her hand on my arm.
Good evening, Willie, darling.
Her room was warm and bright. A huge doll with a painted face sat upon the bed. The woman came to me and smiled.
Give me a kiss.
Then I bowed my head to hers.
We are assembled here today, my dear little brothers in Christ, to examine our conscience and reflect on the mysteries of holy religion. Remember, my dear boys, that we have been sent into the world for one thing and one thing alone, to do God's holy will and save our immortal souls. All else is worthless. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world if he suffer the loss of his immortal soul?
If, as Mose happened, there be at this moment in these benches any poor souls who has had the unutterable misfortune to lose God's holy grace and to fall into grievous sin, I fervently trust and pray that this may be the turning point for that poor soul.
We all are as one before the judgment seat of God. He will reward the good and punish the wicked. One single instant after the body's death, the soul has been weighed in the balance, and the soul has passed to the abode of bliss or to the prison of purgatory, or has been hurled howling into hell. Oh, what agony! What agony then for the miserable sinners! Oh, you hypocrites! Oh, you whited sepulchres! Oh, you who present a smooth, smiling face to the world, while your soul within is a foul swamp of sin. How will it fare with you on that terrible day?
It was from me. Every word of it was from me. Every word that the priest said was from me. Against my sin, my foul and secret sin. The whole wrath of God was aimed at me.
Let us try to realize as far as we can the nature of that abode of the damned which the justice of an offended God has called into existence for the eternal punishment of sinners. Hell is a dark and foul-smelling prison, an abode of demons and lost souls filled with fire and smoke.
hell is a never-ending storm of darkness, dark flames and dark smoke of burning brimstone, amid which the bodies are heaped one upon another without even a glimpse of air. All the filth of the world, all the offal and scum of the world, shall run there as to a vast reeking sore when the terrible conflagration of the last day has purged the world. The bodies of the damned shall exhale such a pestilential odor that one of them alone would infect the whole world. Imagine such a corpse, a prey to flames, a jelly-like mass of liquid corruption, devoured by the fire of burning brimstone and giving off dense, choking, nauseous fumes.
How terrible is the lot of those wretched beings. The blood seethes and boils in the veins, and the brains are boiling in the skull, and the heart in the breast glowing and bursting in a hot mass of burning pulp, and the tender eyes flaming like molten balls.
May it never be our lot, I say. In the last day of terrible reckoning, I pray fervently to God that not a single soul of those who are in this chapel today may be found among those miserable beings whom the great judge shall call, that none of us, not one of us, may hear ringing in his ears the awful sentence of rejection. Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire!
It was for me. Every word from me, it was true. God was almighty. If I should die, if I should then be judged, my flesh shrank as it felt the ravenous tongues of flame. My brain simmering and bubbling within the cracking tenement of the skull. But there was time, there was still time. I could repent, I'd be spared. I had to confess, to speak out in words what I'd done and thought, sin after sin.
How long is it since your last confession, my child?
A long time, Father.
A month?
Longer, Father.
3 months, my child?
Longer, Father.
6 months, then?
8 months, Father.
And what do you remember since that time, my child?
I committed sins of impurity, Father.
How old are you, my child?
19, Father.
19. Oh, you are so very young, child. Let me implore you to give up sin. It kills the body and it kills the soul. Give it up, my child. It is dishonorable.
On that day, so many years ago, I couldn't speak for happiness. Till that moment, I'd not known how beautiful and peaceful life could be. I had confessed, and God had pardoned me. How simple and beautiful life was, after all, and my life lay before me. But what has become of me since that day? I've walked the streets of Dublin through all these days gone by, nursing my wounded pride, my fallen hope and baffled desire. The soul of man has a slow, dark birth, more mysterious than the birth of the body. When the soul of a man is born in this country, there are nets flung at it to hold it back from flight, snares of nationality, language, religion. The day has come and I shall try those nets. I drain my third cup of watery tea to the dregs and set to chewing the crusts of fried bread. Down the naked hallway to the kitchen, I hear my mother's steps. How much is the clock fast now?
1 hour and 25 minutes. The right time is now 10:20. The dear knows you might try to be in time for your lecture.
Fill up the bowl for me to wash.
Well, it's a poor case when a university student is so useless that his mother has to pour his wash water.
You know you enjoy waiting on me.
There's your father pounding on the floor upstairs. Wash and dry yourself and hurry out, for the love of goodness. You know how angry it makes him to find you still here when he comes down. It's he that sent you there, to the university. And look what it's done for you. Have you thought about what I said to you yesterday?
I'm not going to Mass, and there's an end of it.
You'll break my heart with this atheism of yours.
I'm not an atheist. Give me the towel.
Oh, you're of a queer mind, and you've read too much. There's the trouble with you.
I've read little and understood less.
Ah, it's a scandalous shame for you, Stephen. And you'll rue the day you ever set foot in that place. I know how it's changed you.
Good morning, Mother.
Goodbye.
Something has changed me, that's sure. My heart is bitten by an ache of loathing and bitterness. My father's poverty, my mother's mutterings, my loveless life. The girls I pass in the street with their ripe mouths are not for me. The verses I wrote to her image, to my vision, lie yellowing and covered with dust. Let her go. Let her find some clean athlete to love with black hair on his chest. Let them all go. Near the gray block of Trinity, I found my friend. Cranley, I want to speak to you.
Now?
Yes, now. Look, we can't speak here. Come away.
Where are you fellas off to? What about that game, Cranley?
Later on.
We walked for some time in silence. And then I said, Cranley, I've been having an awful time of it.
With your people?
With my mother.
About religion?
Yeah, she wishes me to make my Easter duty.
And will you?
I will not.
Ah, many persons have doubts, even religious persons. Yet they overcome them or put them aside.
I don't wish to overcome them.
Did you believe in religion when you were a child at school? I bet you did.
I did.
And were you happier then?
Often happy and often unhappy. I was someone else then.
How someone else? What do you mean?
I mean that I was not myself as I am now, as I had to become.
Let me ask you a question. Do you love your mother?
I don't know what your words mean.
Have you never loved anyone?
I tried to love God. It seems now I've failed.
Has your mother had a happy life?
How do I know?
How many children had she?
9 or 10. Some died.
Was your father... I don't want to pry into your affairs, but was your father well-to-do when you were growing up?
Yes.
What was he?
Oh, a medical student, an oarsman, a tenor, an amateur actor, a shouting politician, a drinker, a good fellow, something in a distillery, a bankrupt and a present appraiser of his own past. Is there anything else you want to know?
Are you in good circumstances at the present?
Do I look it?
Ah, your mother must have gone through a great deal of suffering. Do as she wishes. Whatever else is uncertain in this world, a mother's love is not. Your mother brings you into the world, carries you first in her body. What do we know about what she feels? But whatever she feels, at least, must be real. Would you not try to save her from suffering more?
If I could, it would cost me very little, but I can't.
What will you do then?
I shall go away.
Where?
Where I can. I have to go. I will not serve that in which I no longer believe, whether it call itself my home, my fatherland, or my church. This race and this country and this life produced me. I shall express myself as I am.
Well, then try to be one of us. In your heart, you are an Irishman.
Do you know what Ireland is? Ireland is the old sow that eats her own farrow. I'll go away from here.
Into exile? Is it you? You poor poet, you?
I don't fear to be alone or to be spurned or to leave whatever I have to leave.
Alone. Quite alone. You have no fear of that. To be separate from all others.
I'll take the risk. There's a lust of wandering in my feet that burns to set out for the ends of the earth.
When will you go?
Soon. Perhaps tomorrow.
Goodbye, then, Stephen.
Goodbye. I sit here now by the open window, writing in my book. Tomorrow, I will go away. The scenes of my youth are still passing sharply and swiftly before my mind.
Once upon a time, and a very good time it was, there was a moo cow coming down the road.
Oh, I say, here's a fellow says he kisses his mother before he goes to bed.
Do not!
Stephen Dedalus is my name. Ireland is my nation.
Stephen, what a little man you've grown.
Now then, who's for more turkey? Here, Stephen, here's something to make your hair curl.
Oh, he'll remember all this when he grows up. The language he heard against God and the priests in his own home.
Let the matter drop.
Let us have no political discussion on this day of all days.
Oh, he'll remember. He'll remember. He'll remember.
It is raining now outside my window. Tomorrow, I leave Ireland. Ireland remembers forgotten beauty. It embraces the loveliness which has long since faded from the world. I desire to press in my arms the loveliness which has not yet come into the world. The white arms of Rhodes, their promise of close embraces, and the black arms of tall ships that stand against the moon, their tale of distant nations. They're held out to say, "We are alone. Come." They call to me, their kinsman, making ready to go. Away from friends and home, I shall learn what the heart is and what it feels. Amen. So be it. Welcome, O life. I go to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience and to forge in the smithy of my soul the uncreated conscience of my race. You have been listening to A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, an NBC Theater production of the novel by James Joyce.
The NBC University Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from the 23rd of April, 1950 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.